Welcome to the Duluth Rundown interview section. We are just about to get going with our next interview, but first, a message from our sponsor, Austin Jaro Sports. Austin Jaro is where you want to go to get anything running related, from gear to shoes to food, and of course, great advice from all the people that work up there. So check out Austin Jaro at 1025 West Central Entrance here in Duluth, Minnesota. Thanks, Austin Jaro.
All right, and now we are joined in our interview portion with our guest, Mr. Roger Reinert. Raj, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, good morning, guys. Glad to be here.
It's been a handful of weeks where we've tried to make this work, and we finally got all three of us to
Found the secret last minute.
Yeah,
totally worked. Yes, I can do that.
No, but thank you for joining us. And let's get into it. Here's where I want to start, because I've known you for, I don't know, 15-ish years, because I moved here in 06, so about 15 years or so, 15, 20 years. And you've been a runner since I've known.
Yeah.
But how long have you been a runner? Tell us about your early days when you got started, where you were.
So, I mean, I did not start as a runner. Mm-hmm. Played high school sports, multiple sports, and really did not enjoy running at all, frankly. Mm-hmm. And in college, I think, like many people, started to put some weight on pretty quickly because I wasn't playing three sports anymore, still eating like I was. Yeah. And I get to grad school and this was in Mankato. I was the Speaker of the Student Senate. And another student senator did the sprint triathlons. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, that seems interesting. Like the run and the bike and the swim. Yeah. But honest guy, I was a good swimmer. And it was usually in open water. And then an okay biker, did not like the run at all. So my whole goal was to be far enough ahead to just fall during the run.
Yeah.
You know, and these were short runs, like 4 miles.
Yeah.
So, I mean, my becoming a runner really goes back to dating a marathoner.
Okay.
And this was like, if I was going to see her, this is how we spent time together. But I kid you not, like, she was the first person that got me to go more than 5 miles.
Okay.
And I'm like, I can't, in my head, I was like, I can't envision running more than 5 miles.
These are college years?
No, after college. I was in my early 30s.
Early 30s, okay. Yeah. So long after college. Yeah.
So thanks, Melissa.
We're still friends. What we do for love.
Just to spend time. Right? And she actually, that year, so that would have been, I think, the 05 half was like the third top three local female in the half marathon. So a very strong runner at the time. And then we broke up and I kept running. And then I also... And I think we all know running is as much social as anything.
Yeah.
It becomes your circle of friends. And so a good friend of mine, Pat Mullen, Minnesota Power guy, lots of folks know. I mean, he's just always like, hey, you should come run with us. Well, I'm not really a runner. Hey, you should come run with us. So that, I mean, Pat more than anyone, Melissa and Pat really got me into running.
Yeah,
so.
Cool.
Nice.
And that would have been around 05, 06, something like that. Yeah.
And did you grow up in Duluth?
I did not, no. I used to say, like, you know, it's a secret that I didn't, but I feel like we have enough folks that are not originally from Duluth that you don't have to pretend like you're not from Duluth. But, no, I came in 98.
Okay.
So, what, 20, I don't do math, 25 some years now.
Something like that,
You grew up in the Mankato area?
No, or? West Central, so straight west from the Twin Cities on the South Dakota border.
Yeah.
I used to say I always wanted hills, trees, and water because we didn't have any of those things.
Yeah.
And so first time we came over Thompson Hill, it's like, where has this been all of my life? Visited once, and my goal was to go like 3 or 4 days up the shore, go blah, blah, Grand Marais. And like literally I went up, immediately cut the rest of the trip short, came back and spent the rest of it in Duluth and just hung out and explored and kind of was like how, you know, that was at a time when people were sacrificing things to be here. Like no one found their dream job with what they were qualified to do. You just sort of made it work and made it work.
Yeah. That's almost exactly my story. Is I grew up in Iowa and visited Duluth and said, I'm moving there. And then, I don't know, maybe 6 weeks later I moved there.
Oh.
I moved here, not knowing anybody.
Well, so you're braver, because it took me probably like 3 years to like, make that transition.
But yeah, I think there's a lot of stories out there like that about Duluth and how much just what it just draws people once they get here and see what it's like.
Well, and now it's interesting because certainly it's field specific, but you have a lot of folks that actually have their dream job within a certain field. And, you know, if you're of a certain age, you want to go, do you know what it was like? Back in the 90s, no one had their dream job.
Or even the people have been here forever, what it was like in the 70s.
For sure.
I like hearing those stories. It's pretty interesting, but I'm also glad that I'm here now and not in the 70s. From what I hear. But kind of just real quick on that same topic, what I find interesting now, as you mentioned, with dream jobs, now people can have their, with telejobs or telework or whatever, you know, you can work from remotely, which is really cool. We're starting to see that more and more.
Well, and especially within certain industries too, healthcare, engineering, transportation, higher ed. I mean, we just we're fortunate to have a pretty diverse local economy. And I think 20 years ago, it was a lot of tourism and maybe not so many other things. But
that's great. It's really cool. My wife, she's in the medical field, and she has a scribe, and the scribe is in Canada, Saskatchewan.
What's a scribe? Hmm.
takes notes during the visits.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And they're in Saskatchewan.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Okay.
Isn't that cool? It's kind of weird, but
it's cool. A long commute.
Yeah. Exactly. Maybe they
don't. So did you, I guess, find joy as you ran more miles, or was it just strictly to spend time and you just gutted it out, or?
No, I mean, I think camaraderie. I mean, one, I found out, like, I was decent. You know, I'm not fast the way I once was. If I was ever that fast, but like, I think I won something, right? I think I placed or got a medal or a trophy, and I'm very, very, reward motivated. So it's like, oh, let's keep doing this.
Yeah.
And definitely I think the social part, again, you know, Pat, and there was a group at Minnesota Power at the time that ran on a regular basis. So just being invited to group runs was a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. Great way to explore the city. I also I would be remiss to not give a shout out to Lisa Byrne, who somewhere in there was like, oh, you should go on a trail run. I'm like, I am not going on a trail run. That sounds awful. Like, why would I want to do that?
Wow.
And then, it got me to go up to Piedmont and do a loop in the off Hutchinson. One loop. And then made me do it again. And then I think probably that fall or soon after the NMTCs, I remember Zaps Loop was my very first one I ever did.
Yeah.
And, you know, so as I've gotten older, trail running is definitely where I spend most of my time. And that's, I mean, it's totally Lisa getting me out and going. So I think for me, it's like, it's so social.
Yeah.
And I think back of, I mean, yeah, there's been great races and, you know, and for me, great times, PRs. But, you know, what I remember is all the social. Like, I can think of running into you at Tony at like, it was the 10K, I think, at Whistle Stop, which I had never planned on doing that day. Both my ex-wife and I were going to do the half, and then she didn't train.
That's right.
So that became the 10K.
Yeah.
And then, like, I was like, well, like, maybe the day before, like, well, if you're doing the 10K, I'll do the 10K. And then the best part of that whole story is we get to the buses and she gets on the 5K bus. She's like, I'm not doing a 10K. I'm doing the 5K. I'm like, well, wait. So we get there and at least I saw Tony at the starting line. I felt a little better about having a familiar face. But I just do. I think for me, the social, the people are the favorite part of.
Like, yeah.
And still keep me motivated.
Yeah. Yeah.
To get out there. So
I think like anyone who's done the NMTC series can say the same of like, wow, this is special.
Yeah.
I mean, I've thought that so many times, like the community we have here in Duluth is special. It's unique. Mm. I don't know if it is unique. I mean, do you think there are other similar tight communities of runners or, you know?
I mean, it seems to me that also that trail runners are a different group. I always, you know, you talk to, and I'm a guy who likes, if I like it, I want to recruit everybody I know to like it too.
Yeah.
So I'm always trying to encourage people to do especially the NMTCs, usually to my own detriment because they're faster than me. So it just means I'm going to be like 10 places behind in the next race. But, you know, it's such a good way to see the city. I mean, I saw so many parts of Duluth I didn't know about because I did the NMTCs. And you meet all these amazing people.
Yeah.
And, you know, folks are intimidated. And I always say two things. I'm like, number one, no matter what, somebody is slower and somebody is faster.
Yeah.
Every single time. Maybe not for you, Mike. I mean, you're usually leading the pack. But for me and many, you know, the more average runner, like, you don't have to feel the pressure.
I think.
And then the other thing is, like, you will never find a more supportive group of people.
Seriously.
Like, just encouraging and,
like,
so especially newer runners or newer to trail running, I think the NMTs specifically are great. And maybe one of you knows, like, why we even call them the NMTCs. I don't know the background story on that, because it's like the Northern Minnesota Track Club, which makes no sense to me.
No tracks.
There's no tracks.
Right? Yeah. Well, they started that way. I mean, they used to road race and that there was now there's Northwoods and NMTC are, I think, the same and different at the same time. Jarl will correct me on that next time I see him.
Okay.
But there was a NMTC road crew, I think, at one time originally.
Just kept the same name, kind of.
They just kept the same name.
Same
just
group.
And evolved, now we just call it.
Just right? evolved yeah. into trails specifically at this point. I think that's how it worked.
So Northern Minnesota Trail Club?
Yeah, exactly. It could be. It could be the same thing.
Like, it could be rebranded.
Right.
I feel like there's a lot of investment in the NMTC spring and fall season. But
yeah.
Before we started recording, we were talking the Kernow, so the trail half marathon around here in Duluth. And so last summer, I did some flagging with Jarl.
Mm-hmm.
Like, why do we call it Jarl's Beach? Do you guys know this story?
I mean, maybe.
I heard this story. Multiple versions, so it'll be interesting. This is from Jarl, which does not mean it's the true story. So, but he said it was like...
He'll correct you on that.
He was running with this group all the time, and they'd get to this section, and he didn't like it, and either didn't want to run it or wanted to quit, and they were like, oh, hey, Jarl, here's your beach. Why don't you just flop down here? And... Is that similar?
That's exactly the story that I've heard as well.
So it's a dig at Jarl all these years, and it's still named.
Which is, you know, and the laugh, of course, is like we all hit that section, and it's like, oh my gosh. So for folks who don't know, it's like, I don't know, a mile of just bouldering.
It's
a good ankle twister, ankle breaker if you're going too quickly.
I'm amazed that guys really run pretty quick through there. I'm amazed.
I've been in there in sections where, like, people are just pressing right on my back, and I'm like, hey.
Yeah.
Like,
you go for it.
We got a while to go yet, so if you want to pass, have at it, but I'm not going any faster.
Yeah.
So it sounds like, if I'm hearing you right, Roger, that kind of the headline of your running journey is that you're easily convinced. I mean, you said, I'll never run more than 4 miles. Oh, no, just train with me for a marathon. Sure. I'll never run on a trail. Yeah. Or actually, I'll try, whatever.
Yeah. It's kind of, you're not wrong, Mike, especially if it's somebody I like and respect and, you know, you wear me down. So,
yeah
that would be, you know, my friend Amber is into ultra trails. I think you both know Amber. And, like,
she's been on the podcast.
Awesome. Yeah. Oh. Yeah. You know, she's talking about ultras, and I'm still at never. No, I mean, that's just crazy. I can't even get my head around that. I'm sure I will. I'm sure at some point I'll do. I'll do at least the Voyager. I mean, come on, that's our race. So, and I think too, the headline would be just like, fun to be out with friends. I mean, every run is better when it's shared. It's
definitely.
Just time goes by, you get to be with people and tell stories, and you know, as much as I like the solo run, because I think it's like super great for mental health.
Yeah.
I mean, it has,
yeah.
you know, for those who are familiar with EMDR, it has that same, like, your conscious mind is occupied while your subconscious gets to go where it needs to go.
Mm-hmm.
It is so great to be out with friends too, and just have that, you know, other people golf or do whatever. And I mean, that's just how I spend time with people.
What was what did you say the
brand? EMDR.
EMDR. So, I'm not familiar with what that is.
Yeah. So, EMDR is a kind of therapy that uses rhythm. So it stands for what, eye motion something. So one technique is your eyes watch something that moves. The therapist I've worked with uses these tapper things that sort of vibrate in between your hands. But the concept is it's something birhythmic in your body that just occupies your conscious brain. So when we're trail running, we have to like, where are my feet going? Am I going to trip? And you know, it's a little bit more occupying than road running is. And that's why I know this is so true for me. You get done with a good trail run and you're like, oh, that's the answer. I mean, it's the thing you didn't even know you were thinking about. And you're like, with certainty, because your subconscious has been working on that the whole time. And once you're finally, once your conscious mind is free, it can connect again and go, oh, I see what you did there, and move forward.
Right,
so, you know, it's a super, I love it. I have to do them alone sometimes just because I need that, that headspace time. But, but I would say that social is really a theme for me.
Yeah, big time. I think with races too, I mean, that's such a social, I mean, a gathering as well. So, I mean, I think that kind of loops it like, run with friends, but then, especially if you find friends or people or you meet people. I mean, I can't count how many friends I've met just at a race because we're running side by side something like that, you know?
For a good while, right?
Like, you live in Duluth too? What are you doing next weekend, you know?
Well, all right, I'm going to blank on her name right now, but a couple of years ago at the Winter Series, and, you know, the Amity where you're just doing laps. I ended up doing a couple laps with this woman who I now follow on Facebook because she's, like, you know, a national-level trail runner. It was like, oh, cool. Like, we got to chat for a good while because we were just right there with each other, right?
So, So when you were training with your girlfriend at the time, she was training for a marathon.
Now, I wouldn't say we were training together.
Okay. Oh, just you'd run from time to time. But did you end up doing a marathon at that time?
No.
Or you said...
No, the first half I ever did was 2008. And then ran the... And I'd never... I mean, you know, I'd go out and volunteer. Right? I think Grandma's is an event where either you're all in or you leave town. And I was all in, so I'd volunteer, do other things, but started running Grandma's in 08 and then did it for a bunch of years, did the half a bunch of years in a row around 2014-ish. Tony might remember this. Like, worked really hard to try and get a sub 130, never sub 130 in like 13 seconds, never quite got there. And then, and then Afghanistan, and like, I think everybody's running lives kind of took a turn during COVID. It took me, and I've done two fulls, but both were virtual. I did one when I was deployed in New York City, and then did Grandma's the year that that was virtual. That was actually, I mean, coming back to running being a, you know, a friend and a social thing, I ran it down on Park Point in 6 mile loops. So, and then invited, like, my core, we call ourselves the Amigos. There's a core group of us that do a lot of running together. So invited them to come down. And so some did a 6 mile loop with me. Some, so a couple, like Tiff Carey, did two loops with me. And so that was fun. Like, each loop, it was like it energizing because it's like, oh, Mike's going to be here on the next loop. And that's fun. We're going to get it, you know, we'll get a chance to chat. And
new,
like,
person, new stories.
Yeah, new person, new stories. Yeah. Exactly. Instead of feeling like you're doing the same, you know, loop over and over again. My favorite part of that run, this is sarcasm, I decided to head into the wind, you know, let's do that right away, and now it's, this is the point, the wind shifted, so by the time I'm done, I'm finishing into the wind. I was just so ground down, the full is not my race.
I was going to ask if you have a distance, whether it be training or racing, that you think suits you or that you prefer.
I mean, road definitely was the half, but you know, it's been a good while since I've done a half. I mean, I think the last few years I really enjoyed the you know, the Kernow, the half voyage or the half ultra, the marathon distance on trails. Because it gives you something to really start earlier in the spring with as soon as we can get on the trails and start building out. So, like, yesterday got in a good 14 miler. You know, I'd like to get in a solid up to 20 and then back down a little bit before the race in July. But again, it's, you know, mostly trails now. And it's, thank goodness, like, it took so long for the trails to dry out this year, but they're pretty amazing right now. So
Definitely. That's fun. I was gonna ask training wise, what you do to maybe prepare for something like.
So I'm still working a plan that Tony gave me like 5 years ago.
Yeah,
which is probably not a good thing. That is my downside on training. Like, if I have a routine and I just stick with that routine, and right, our bodies adjust and like get to can do that really well and really efficiently. So not making changes, I think, is not a detriment. And I would say too, I'm not like a smart runner in that. Like my buddy Glenn Flanagan, whom I think maybe both of you know, is like, he just reads. He reads all the stuff and implements all the stuff and. Like, is one of the most thoughtful, disciplined runners I know, and that is not me. I just kind of do the same thing over and over and over again, and get the same results.
Yeah,
so, I tend to run on Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays, with Wednesday being a trail run, and Friday's an off day, long run Saturday, and a recovery run on Sunday. Mm-hmm. Something I learned from Tony was the stupid slow run, and which has been a lot of fun. It's like an excuse to, what I vividly remember from that conversation was the only reason you wear a watch is to tell yourself to go slower. And so like, they have the permission to like, okay, so it's a 9-something. I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
Cause that's what today is about. And especially on Sundays, like in the rhythm of my week, that feels really good. And then Monday is often an off day, and then trying to get, when I have enough time, I try to get strength in, at least 3 times a week, but that doesn't always happen. I think that for me in the last few years, like adding leg strength has been a really helpful thing. 2 years ago when I was running really, really well, I would credit doing both trail. I would do trail and then go in the gym and do leg right afterwards.
Yeah.
So to put that stress on top of stress, and that seemed to really pay good returns.
In what way? I mean, were you faster, just felt stronger?
Faster, stronger for sure. Could hold just a comfortable pace for a lot longer. Okay. You know, I think of one of the runs that, lots of favorite runs, right? But I think one of the ones I really enjoy is the old Harder Than Hell route, where you started at Spirit and ended at Bayfront. And a lot of us still do that a few times a season. And, you know, I can look back 2 years ago when I felt like, okay, I was running really well, and ran it with, a friend, and like, finished in like 2:19, which was a good time for that route. And, and wasn't destroyed. Like, that was a push, but it didn't destroy me.
Recovery-wise, you can bounce back faster.
Yep. Or that year did the Kurnow, and I remember running into Jody Zalesnikar at something later, and she's like, yeah, I know you did the Kurnow, and then I saw you running again the next day. And I was like, that was my did a 6-mile recovery run.
Yeah.
And it really, like, really wasn't problematic.
Which is nice. When you get fit, you can start to do those things that you would have thought would have been crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. You just recover that much quicker, and by decreasing the pace, the stress in that run itself is so much less. And
I just think as you get older too.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm 52, the strength work really matters, because we're fighting against our bodies at that point, and just sort of a natural degeneration of strength. And so it's more important to, and I mean, I'd go back like plus or minus 40, and I'd say, well, trails are my strength work. Like, I'm trails to get stronger, to run faster on roads. Then it's like, guys, my downfall is nutrition. I just am so bad at that. It used to be like, I eat whatever I want because I'm a runner.
Yeah.
And like, now it's like, oh crap, I gotta run and think about what I'm eating, because it's just because I'm getting older. So
that's a challenge. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So you talk about nutrition as in like, not while you're running, like
breakfast, lunch, dinner, overall, right? Yeah, that thinking, being thoughtful about protein and carbs, and people are kind of shocked at how poorly I eat. I'm a bachelor. I eat like a bachelor. It's like dinner. Might be a plate, a bag of tortilla chips and some salsa. That's not the protein your body needs to recover. So.
Well, I mean, if you have a certain amount of time in a day, you want to spend the time running and like cooking a gourmet, like organic farm fresh meal.
Yeah.
You're going to spend an hour doing that instead of running? Like, right. Is that going to provide right. a return? Yeah. You know, better return? Probably not.
It is, I think, one of the, at least it's an area for me where I have over, especially over the last couple of years, like proactively tried to get a little bit smarter about it. Mm-hmm. But in a lot of what we want to do with nutrition is different than what like maybe the average population does. So, right. You know, you meet with, like, I remember meeting with a nutritionist through the VA clinic in Superior and sort of got the basic health. Yeah, I know that. Like, I'm trying to figure out how many grams of protein should I be taking in a day? And like, how can you take in 118 grams of protein? That seems like insane. That's yeah. like everything I put in my mouth has to be chicken. And not interested in doing it. So, yeah. I mean, she tried her best to be helpful, but it wasn't exactly what I was looking for. Because I think, you know, I've seen, you know, where you don't perform on the run the way you want to because you haven't fueled correctly.
Yeah.
Right. And it used to be, I think, more of, and I mean, if we go way back in time, like the first person who ever taught me about goo was Clint Agar. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, what? Like, why? What?
You.
15 minutes beforehand, 30 minutes during. I'm like, that, okay, fine, I'll try that. And it's like, oh, wow. Yeah. And then caffeinated goo?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. I remember doing the Fond du Lac, the pumpkin run at Fond du Lac, and that's the first time I had caffeinated goo.
Yeah.
And I'm like at the starting line bouncing off the wall. It's like, let's go, let's do this, let's go, come on. Because I really didn't drink, coffee, I didn't take caffeine.
Oh, wow, yeah.
It was a boost, for sure.
That'd make an impact.
Yeah, it did make an impact for sure. I had a friend out on a long run last week or 2 weeks before trail run, and so I brought some electrolyte goo. Uh-huh. All I heard about for the 3 miles after she took it was how she wanted to throw up. Yeah. Wow. It's like, I can't believe it made me. I'm like, we're just trying here. You need a nutrition strategy.
Yeah,
not
exactly.
Taking anything is not going to get you where you need to go. So,
like Brett said, you know this doesn't work for you.
Right, exactly, right? And so it was funny. Then the next run I brought shot blocks. Mm-hmm. They were ginger ale flavored. I love ginger ale.
Yeah.
That was strike two.
Really?
Wow. Yeah. Can't stand ginger. I'm like, all right, I give up.
You figure. Strawberry.
You're on your own.
Gummy bears.
That actually, so I got, she called last night and she was like, hey, I found the thing that I don't hate. I'm like, what's that? Strawberry flavored gummy bears. I'm like,
yeah,
never would have come up with that. Mm-hmm. So good for you.
Like the fourth grader special. Nice.
Yeah good it for works. You. Yeah.
So you started as a triathlete. Have you dabbled in any multi-sport endeavors since then, or did you kind of just get right into running and that's where you've been?
Yeah, pretty much. Like I said, really it was a year where, and I think if I go back in time, it was dating Melissa, and I like, didn't train to swim, you know, because normally I would do swimming in the winter to be ready. Just sort of like figure the bike would do its own thing. And like I said, didn't enjoy the run, just hanging on. And so that season didn't do the other things.
Right.
Just would run and run with her on occasion. And so then I think actually probably did like my first run. And, you know, and it went well. And and then just kept running after that. Really haven't. And when I've tried to get into cross training, don't enjoy it. So, my worst kept secret is I don't like cross country skiing. I've tried. I own skis. I'll try again. But, you know, even in the winter, I'd rather go running. It's just like it's such an, for me, it's such a mental health, a stress release.
Yep.
And the easy button is, and one of the things, and I'm sure others think this too. One of the things I love about running is it's an affordable sport. All you need are shoes, and you don't have any specialist gear. And
access wise, right out the door.
Yeah, and especially where we live, it's
like.
And I found that too with trying to learn cross country skiing. Gosh, I got to think about where I'm going to go. Like what the and
conditions
here, you know, I know the roads and I know the trails. I don't literally don't have to think about it and can just go. And so, no, that's a long way of saying, no, I've just pretty much run ever since. So,
yeah, I think Tony and I are pretty non-judgmental when it comes to the skiing aspects.
So. Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I'm in the exact same boat with you.
We're in the same boat.
I'm like, my God, I am so slow. And you both know Adam Sundberg, right?
Yeah.
So I'm telling Adam, for those who don't, Adam's a big cross country, gifted cross country skier, and I'm telling him like how much I dislike cross country skiing. It's like, he's like, what don't you like about it? And he's like, it's like running with wings. I'm like, no, it's not. It's like 2x4s strapped in my feet, like trying to slide across. It's like, well, you're doing it wrong. I'm like, clearly, I'm doing it wrong.
You should not be crashing down every hill. That's not how it's supposed to go.
Yeah.
For me, it's the wax. Like the wax. Like, oh, okay, this is too much. Like,
yeah.
I have shoes.
Yes, they're right there. All I have to do is lace them up. Like, maybe I have to put yak tracks on. I don't know.
Yeah. And there's also then okay, I forgot my skis. Where are my poles? Wait, what did I do with my boots?
Yeah.
Wait, these are my skate boots. I mean, need my classic boots. Yeah. And there's just so much going on.
Yeah. And I also, too, I have Raynaud's. So, like, holding the poles, it's not usually an issue in my feet, but in my hands will get so cold. They need
AA battery operated heated pole grips. Yeah. Is what they need.
Yeah.
So that's a $1 million idea right there for everybody.
Gloves, right? But now again, it's like too much gloves. Equipment. They all I want are shoes. Just put gloves. Shoes on and your layers and off you go.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I agree.
I'm really curious, Roger. So you mentioned Afghanistan a little bit. You've served our country, which thank you, by the way.
No, thank you. Appreciate it.
Really curious kind of what that's like being overseas, trying to train, actually doing a marathon. And I'm curious what it's like, the culture of running, physical fitness, and kind of that training mentality with other, you know, fellow servicemen and women.
Those are really great questions, Mike. So I was on a base in north of Kabul primarily, I could tell so many stories. I'll try to you can rein me in. So the New York, that when I got there, it was July. Hot, oh my gosh.
How hot are you talking? I mean, we need some perspective here.
Well, I mean, Kabul is sort of Denver like right, because it's in a basin of the Hindu Kush. It's not desert. It's very brown. You're surrounded by mountains. Most of the year you could see snow on top of the mountains. Like in January we got like Denver, we'd get snow and it would go away typically the next day.
Okay.
So staying a few days was pretty unusual. So, but it was, 100. It was not super humid, so that was nice. Mm-hmm. But it was like you're out running at 5 in the morning, or it's just like later in the day was just not an option. And we typically worked like from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. or 10 p.m. or whatever, depending on what was. So if you didn't go, it's the other thing, like, these days, like trying to get myself out right away at the start of the day for a run seems like mission impossible. Mm-hmm. And like there, it just happened every day because that was your time.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, you didn't know if you'd have that time again later on in the day.
Sure, sure.
And so when I got there, there was somebody figured out I was a runner and connected me with a group. And I got to say, on a base that had hundreds of people on it, I felt like there were 6 of us.
Okay.
That ran on a regular basis. You would see out there every morning. One was an Air Force guy. One was a Marine. Me. There was another Navy guy. But, I mean, it was kind of the same 6-ish people that you'd see out. One was this awesome Australian. So we were a multi, we were a coalition force on that base. So I keep telling her she's got to come to Duluth and do grandma's. All you got to do is get here. It won't cost you anything else. We'll take care of you. So she actually, during your deployment, for us, if you're deployed for a year, I'm not sure for Australia, but she took her leave and went to Greece and ran the original marathon. Nice.
Oh, cool.
That was her break from Afghanistan.
Cool.
I don't know if that's what I would have done, but so somehow, and then somehow relatively early figured out that they were doing the virtual New York City.
Okay.
And originally it was supposed to be and the New York City marathon folks were amazing. Like we got their virtual training plan. Yeah. We got their premium, which meant there was actually a human. I forget her name now, but she was an Olympic qualified runner who worked with us personally, would email back and forth and look at what you were doing and make suggestions. And
cool.
And that felt really really supported. And then as the race day came closer, early November, they shipped over medals and shirts and all the stuff.
Wow.
But originally, everyone was supposed to come from kind of throughout Afghanistan to the base I was on and run it there.
Because you had 6. Like we have six.
So I think they had almost 200 throughout the country. Wow. But I think it had to do with proximity, like being able to get to Kabul.
Okay.
I mean, and then in like October-ish, we had an attack on our base. Oh. And so then the base security was like, yeah, that's not happening. Mm-hmm. We're not having 200 people running around the perimeter of the base. So that became everyone on your own. Like those of us on that base couldn't run it together.
Yeah, wow.
So I did it. I think I did it on the day of the actual New York City Marathon. And on that base, I called it my nook and cranny route. If I went every little place I could around the perimeter, I could basically get a 3 mile loop in. Oof. Two things on that day, I had. I didn't have goo. I didn't have anything. And I'd reached home. Uh-huh. And I kid you not, Tiff Carey and some of my other running friends sent a care package. It arrived the day before.
Oh, wow.
It was like, thank God. and then I had some Gatorade mixed up. And on the side of my building, I had lined it up. And every 3 miles, I'd hydrate. Every six, I would goo and hydrate, right?
Yeah, do your little aid station.
Yep, my own little aid station. So about mile 18, I come around, and none of my stuff is there.
What?
What? What is... I'm having a little panic attack, see one of the guys who works on the base. He's over by the dumpsters, and I'm, like, pointing, because it doesn't speak English. And he's like, garbage! Not garbage! Not garbage!
Yeah.
So now, at mile 18, I'm dumpster diving to try and find goo in my Gatorade I could finish that. So then I do.
You found it in the dumpster.
I did. I found enough. And then, so then I finish... And, like, literally, like, it's the most anticlimactic thing you can think of.
Yeah,
I just ran a marathon. And I'm like, looking around for somebody, like... And
cheering, arms in the air. Yeah,
it's like, this guy comes walking down the street. I'm like, hey, can you take a picture? I just finished a marathon.
Nice.
I just finished the New York City marathon, right?
Yeah, whatever, man. So, that's my photo.
Cheering squad, huh?
And then I go into work, and my boss is like... Oh, I won't use his language. Did you run that marathon this morning? Yes, sir. Okay. the most anticlimactic thing you could imagine. And then the bummer was doing it virtually meant you got an automatic entry into the real thing, an automatic comp entry into the real thing.
Okay.
Cool. And then, you know, like many veterans, life kind of came apart at the seams when I came home, so it didn't end up actually doing it, but... Yeah, it was a really great way to just like get up, and you really had no privacy there. So that run was kind of what we were talking about earlier. It was like it was my only alone time to sort of be with my own thoughts. So
yeah.
Huh. Cool.
Yeah, I have to assume that's important.
It was helpful for sure.
Yeah. Wow, that's a story though.
Yeah.
Cool. I also wanted to touch on your running for mayor of Duluth. And so me and Tony, we're going to ask you the tough questions.
Okay.
What are you proposing to do for the running population in Duluth?
Free Our entries to grandmas know. As long as I'm
yes.
here.
There you go. Yes. It's on the record. It's on the record, people.
Sorry, Shane. No, I think...
you just lost Shane's vote, by the
way. Yeah. Although I did sign up for both the 5K and the half, whatever they're calling that. There so, and that was a healthy entry fee. So, no, I think one of the things I'm really interested in doing is, it's important. I think it's an important part of Duluth's image that we're an active community.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, it's pretty selfish for me. Like, running is definitely my thing. So if you're a runner, I'm probably your guy because this is just what I do on a really regular basis.
Yeah.
If you're a cross-country skier, I'll try to be your guy too. but I also think, the way that it helps not just us stay active as Duluthians, whether it's running, whether it's golf, whether it's hiking, whether whether it's cross country skiing, whether it's biking. I mean, all these things keep us healthy and active as a population.
Mm-hmm.
The health informatics around that are really significant.
Mm-hmm.
The happiness levels, the life longevity, the lowering of healthcare costs if we have an active population. And right now, it's really It's really very zip code driven within our community. Mm-hmm. You tend to go east, and it's more active, and that certainly has to do with wealth and just the ability to have the time to do that.
Yeah. Access,
the means.
You know, go west, not so much. So interested in finding more opportunities for everybody who wants to live a healthier lifestyle to be able to do that. Mm-hmm. You know, I like I said earlier, if I like something, I want everyone else to like it. So
yeah.
I would love to like have weekly mayor runs and just like come run with me. Like,
yeah,
it, you know, and everybody is funny. I'm sure you've both had it too, because I'm the slowest of this trio that's talking right now. But everybody's like, oh, I can't run with you. You're too fast. And it's like,
yeah,
not every day.
Like, yeah.
You know, let's just go out and like start at City Hall and do a, you know, do a loop or something. Yeah. And, you know, Bill Clinton was kind of famous for that.
Right.
Like, he wasn't killing it when he was out running. Right. It was just a chance to like run with the president and talk about whatever's on your mind, right?
Yeah.
And then, you know, Mike, the third thing I would say is that the big events like grandmas are just, they're so important for the community, not just economically, which obviously, you know, grandmas is huge. But the, whether it's the, you know, the stuff that Kim and Annie Hollick do in terms of the winter series or the fall series, you know, those opportunities that bring others to Duluth, as we sort of talked about earlier, and then potentially they stay because they find something, they fall in love with the community, they find work that they can do here, or they can bring their work with them. You know, one of the biggest challenges we have right now is just enough housing inventory for all the folks, not work opportunities. And if you went back 20 years, that would have been the problem. Jobs.
So. Exactly. Yeah.
But yeah, free grandma's entries.
Okay. Great. Great. That's what we want.
Yeah.
That's what the people have spoken.
Caveat.
That's what we want.
Yeah. Like, if Shane says yes.
We need one of those kind of like, not responsible for, you know, like lawyer disclaimers at the end of this.
Not pre-approved by grandma's marathon, to be clear.
At the end of this podcast. Yeah, for sure. Very fastly spoken.
No, but I do think that our events really, and I often share the story of when I was at the Capitol. I always had a little, I called my office at the Capitol the Southern Visit Duluth office, because I had a little card rack outside my door with all the things in it, right? You know, did I hope people would go to and visit? Sure. Actually, what I more wanted was to remind them that they already had. And I had such an easier time working on a whole spectrum of issues at the Capitol because people had been here. So like one of the big, I think many have forgotten about this, but one of the big challenges we had 10, 12 years ago was sanitary sewer overflows. We were, when we had big rain events, we were dumping raw sewage right into Lake Superior. And the EPA was like, for good reason, you shall not do that anymore. And so, you know, we had to build holding tanks. We it was a costly project, and we managed to tackle it within 3 years. And a big, you know, from my efforts in St. Paul, a big part of that was people knew Duluth. Maybe they only knew Canal Park. Maybe they only knew certain parts. But from that, I could be like, well, this holding tank, if you were in Canal Park, and you just, that's where that one would be. And all of a sudden, it's like, oh, that's not abstract.
Right.
You know, versus maybe another community in Minnesota that no one's ever been to and has no reference point for. You know, I think what I learned is tourism sure is an important part of our local economic sector, but it's also an incredibly powerful marketing tool for us as a community to do all sorts of things with. And I, you know, I remember when I first joined the Navy and I was at officer school and we were going around and introducing ourselves, people knew Duluth. Like they'd heard of it on a scale of like Boston and like New York City and Chicago. Like they'd heard of it. They knew where it was. And it, that kind of blew me away for a community of less than 90,000 people.
So. Yeah. And I mean, I think for us living here, it's like, it's just our small little, you know, town with it. That's really interesting.
People know about it. And I think it has to do with big events and, the, you know, being a tourist destination for sure. So,
I'm curious to focus on, I guess, kind of the equality aspect. I mean, you want to get everyone out for healthy activities. What are the biggest barriers right now?
Right. I mean, we still struggle with income disparities from really one end of the community to the other. And it does tend to be east versus west. And it tends to continue to drive that east versus west split within our community. So just being thoughtful about where the economic development opportunities, especially in the western part of our community, that give people the opportunity for more income. Because mm-hmm. with more income comes more free time.
Sure.
If that's how we choose to use it.
Okay.
I think also we have to be really thoughtful about where are the like probably all of us learned from somebody else about being active.
Yep.
And if you're a single parent trying to hold down multiple jobs and you have kids, like you right. don't have any chance to like right. show somebody yeah. running. I mean, right. yeah, I'm picturing that person right now thinking, listening to us talk about running, going like, yeah, it must be nice to have that kind of free time. Right.
Right. Right.
Right.
So things like the Valley Youth Center, things like the Boys and Girls Club, mm-hmm. those programs, the after school kind of stuff, weekend kind of stuff where kids can like learn that from others if they're not able to learn it from their caregiver, their parent, mm-hmm. are so helpful because, you know, we carry that through a lifetime. And I think back, like for me, my dad went to a Catholic high school and track was the only sport.
Oh, wow.
So growing up, like he really wanted me to run track because uh-huh. that's the sport he had done.
Yeah.
I really wanted to play baseball. You know, so I ran track for a couple of years to make it happy. Yeah, and then in ninth grade, switched to baseball.
Right.
Played baseball for the rest of high school. But in there, learned running. Like,
right.
I had some basic concept of it. Mm-hmm. So when it came mm-hmm. back around in life,
yeah.
It wasn't foreign to me.
Right.
And, you know, for a lot of our youth, mm-hmm. if they're not modeled that,
yeah.
it is foreign.
That's so, interesting that yeah. it maybe doesn't have to take right away,
yeah.
but just being introduced to it at some point young.
Right.
And then you've got that background that you can fall back on should you
yeah.
regain an interest in it.
Because you think, too, in most school settings, running is not a sport that
right.
you're exposed to. You
right.
might run as part of something else, but right. it's sort of like the short burst sprint
That's
stuff.
That's often the concept yeah. is I run when I play soccer
yeah.
or I run first to second or yeah. something.
And you yeah. might go out for cross country or something and
right.
run it there. So
right.
you're not really getting exposed to like what a 3 or 4 or 5 mile run might look like and
yes.
feel like, or mm-hmm. get taken out on our trails and sort of get exposed to that as well.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I mean, I think there are some pretty, I think our best opportunity is those after school opportunities. And I'm really interested in seeing how can the city with Parks and Rec better partner with the school district.
Hmm.
You know, we have the same population largely.
Yeah.
We tax the same folks largely.
Yeah.
Are there opportunities for us to share physical resources, share services? So that we're kind of both ending it.
So along yeah. those lines, especially when you speak of sharing services and things, and this is maybe not a city thing per se, but tracks, public tracks and the public schools, you know, and you can't get on. I mean, I don't right. think there's really any track in Duluth that, yeah. How does that work? And, is it something that's the city can be involved in, or is it just a purely school district thing, or how do
I think that's actually a really great example of what I was just commenting on. I think there is an opportunity there for us to approach the school district and say, and frankly UMD as well,
correct,
and yeah. say, hey, there's community interest, because let's be real, every single one of us has illegally used a track in
correct
town.
Yeah,
I mean, some yep. of us might have climbed over a fence at Central High School and used the one
maybe the one yeah
yep. I don't know perhaps where the scar on my hand is from. You know, so if the need is there and an asset's not being used,
yeah.
like, what does that look like?
Mm-hmm.
And is right. there an opportunity for it not only to be more fully used, like maybe you even, the school district or UMD, whoever it is, can even generate a little revenue.
Correct. There, is there another option besides a blanket? No.
Yeah. Buy a track pass or
right.
something.
Hmm.
You know, so many things that I've learned because, I mean, gosh, it's been almost 20 years in some way, shape, or form is just asking the question.
Yeah.
You know, I'm trying to get the right people around a table.
Yeah.
And, you know, you got to think through some liability issues, but mm-hmm. These are all public entities, so we all have robust liability options in place. But, I mean, we all do speed work.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've been up at UMD several times already over the last few weeks, and I know we're not technically supposed to be there, but, you know,
yeah.
and no one hassles us.
Yeah.
And I think I'll take that a step further.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the real challenges is indoor.
Oh, absolutely.
For our winter and spring.
Yeah.
So, you know, as we think about, and that could be similar, but that now is we have less of those.
Correct.
So the demand is more. I know we've gotten bounced out of the UMD indoor track before, you know, just based on priority.
Yeah.
But, you know, as we think about kind of the missing thing in Duluth in terms of recreation, active recreation,
yes, mm-hmm,
it is that indoor space.
100%.
So
if any town in the country needs something like that, it's Duluth, Minnesota. Yeah. It's incredibly active and cold.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And spring. I mean, for real. Yeah. You know, this spring, oh my gosh.
Right.
Yeah. That all the spring sports trying to get going and everything was wet and couldn't dry out. And, you know, so as we think about an indoor field house, I think that is a real thing, and I've heard a lot of folks asking about it for soccer, for lacrosse. The track would be a nice addition to it.
Yep.
You know, something maybe in the Clyde, Wade, Wheeler area where we already kind of have a hub of sports activities going on.
And you got space. There's space down there. So
Yeah.
It's fun to at least at bare minimum, like you say, you kind of ask the question, start the conversation, just kind of pie in the sky, big ideas.
Yeah.
And then just kind of go from there.
And I think if we learned anything from the Clyde developments, it this is possible.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And you know, Clyde's not a city resource. The city participated in it. We helped with getting some of the brownfield dollars. We took the money that we got from the Peterson Arena that burned down and moved that over as well. But yeah, it was a combination of private dollars, some of those public dollars, the Boys and Girls Club coming in. You know, it's really been an amazing asset for the community. So, and I'm a big fan of hubs of things. So I think of a hub there. I think like out towards the zoo of having a hub maybe of like trail stuff and kayaking along, you know, by the, in maybe we do something in the Fairmont Park area with the zoo and then the zoo benefits because they can do concessions and food and beverage and things like that too.
Right.
So I think that's a real possibility and I think there's a real demand for that indoor field space.
Yeah.
Especially coming off last winter.
Yeah, big absolutely. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
I'll make sure it has a track.
Even because even just up here, even just grandma's training alone requires that you start in January.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, so January, February, March, and now as it's been April of less than ideal training weather.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Well, and I don't think this is like any sort of confidential information, but so Minnesota Power has a running group.
Right.
For years participated in that, and they would start in January. And we would... We would run it indoors at UMD, sometimes at Scholastica, sometimes over at UWS. But the last several years, it was at it was the Amsoil Concourse.
Oh, okay.
At the deck.
Yeah.
Because there weren't really any competing interests. And smooth floor and, you know, the lap was roughly a track lap. Can't remember exactly, but...
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, an option for that group, certainly, but not an option for the general public.
Yeah. Right, right.
They have running groups as well as inline skating at U.S. Bank. It's a paid, paid thing. So
In the stadium because they used to be in the dome back in the day.
Yeah.
Why couldn't that be a similar situation?
Yeah,
yeah. That's cool. That would be.
But I think that demand is out there in many different ways. So
absolutely.
Interesting.
Do you have any other questions, Tony?
What's next for you, running wise? Running for mayor and then running.
That's the only race this year. I keep telling myself that because I'm running so, can I say crappy on your podcast? My running is so crappy this year, but I get out there and just keep doing it. And it has gotten a little bit better over the last few weeks. I did Woodland last week.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, 2 weeks ago, whatever.
Yeah, 2 weeks ago.
I do not enjoy that run. That was brutal.
Deer trails.
Just like by the time you're done with that climb, I'm like, I taste blood. This is not. Like, you're just anaerobic for the first mile going uphill. But, I think I signed up for the Carno. I should check. But otherwise, I really don't have, you know, like I said, I plan to race the Urban 5K Fun Run, the half, which I've never done before. But, you know, in my head, I'll be like, okay, I'm just going to stop and do all the things. I'm going to eat the bacon and drink the beer and, like, all the, you know, the things I've never done because I've been, like, seriously trying to run it.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
But not many. I mean, mostly it's just getting out. It kind of, like, where we started is getting out and being social and, you know, in this, it's a – you know, I've run for other things before, nothing like this. It's just completely different than anything I've ever done before. Mm. And I'm so self-aware of not losing myself in that process. So yeah, continuing to be around people who don't care. Just like, oh, it's just Roger. I'm like, like that's important to me. And I think our running community is really good for that. Like, people don't take you too seriously, which is important.
And especially the trail community.
Right? Especially the trail community. Like I was at Tiff Carey's wedding last summer, and that was all cycling, right? So they cycled to where they were going to get married, and then cycled away from that. I'm not a big cycler, but I wanted to participate. And we sit down, and somebody who I won't name, but you would know, sat down and said, hey, you just need to know you need a real biking helmet, because if you're going to be married, you can't look like a dork. And I'm like, fair. That's good feedback. So, but it's somebody who runs as well. So like that is our trail running community. Yep, so not only is it good for me physically, but it's good to be around people that aren't going to treat you any different, which is really helpful and grounding. So
that's awesome. Yeah. Do you have any bucket list races? I mean, beyond this year,
more and more I'm interested. So not a race, but some folks know I'm a pilot, and what I'd really, really like to do is fly to a race.
Okay.
Like a real flight, not like just in the area, but like a cross country sort of thing and whatever it is. And, you know, and then it's a PR because I'll never do it again. But like combine an adventure with a race would be that would be kind of my bucket list kind of thing. And I mean, there's a few of those out there. Like in Pensacola, they do, it's like a 9.4, and it's a bridge. Mm. You cross over three bridges going from the Gulf back into downtown Pensacola. Hmm. Those kind of runs are, especially around road running now, are really interesting because they just seem like, be fun. Because Tony, we may have had this conversation. Like, I'm probably never willing to work hard enough again to be as fast as I could be. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So then it's like, well, what do we just want to do and stay active and have fun? And I would, as we're wrapping up, just like for, you know, folks that are listening, I think that ultimately ends up being the key. Like, just get out there and keep moving. Yeah. Like, eventually you're going to get older. Eventually you're going to get slower. Yeah. But 100%. If you're still doing it, you're still active and you're healthy. And the older you get, the smaller that group of people that is healthy and active becomes. So
That's true. Yeah, so it's all enjoyable, no matter how you approach it, whether it's kind of focused running or casual running. It's all enjoyable. So
I think, too, especially like if you get injured or something, it's so easy to just get so down in the dumps. And then you think, what is this all about anyways? Yeah. Like, am I getting paid to perform? No. Like 99.99% of people don't get paid. They have to pay money.
Right.
It's for fun, you know? So. Yeah.
And you run the danger of getting to that point where it's just not fun anymore.
Yeah.
Like, you're always living on the edge, and you're mentally exhausted. And we all know runners who were super talented who just quit.
Yeah.
And like, I know one who's never run since and was super talented. And it's like, you got to find that psychological balance where it's fun.
Yeah.
Even when it's hard work.
Yeah.
To be able to suffer through when you're going to get injured and all of that. So, and I come back to, I think that's where having a good circle of friends is super helpful.
Like, definitely.
People that you can just like sort of, you know, complain to when it's not going well. Yeah. And they still get you out there. Like, okay, come on, let's go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, now you're publicly complaining about your crap year to us and maybe the however many listeners we have.
That's all right. So yeah, if you see me out there, I am going slow, folks, but I'm out there. I'm going. So
hopefully that helps. Hopefully that helps.
Yeah. Awesome, guys. This was super fun.
Yeah, thank you so much. Yeah. Appreciate it.
Yeah, appreciate your patience and flexibility.
Boom, that wraps up episode number 61 of the podcast. And I want to thank Roger Reinert for joining us in the interview portion. Really fun to talk to Roger. Mm-hmm. Like you said, man, we could have kept on going. Just like with so many of our interviews,
there's
so much more we can always talk about.
So many stories.
It's just been great. Thanks to you, Mike, taking care of the editing and all that kind of stuff that happens kind of behind the scenes. And we'll see everybody out there.